on the way to the top floor. I ain't selling out though, but I'm on the way. Got a lot of real, must motivate. Hold all the moves, I'ma play and play. On the way.
Motivation for all the real ones, nigga.
On the way. On the way to the big check. You ain't know I'm up next, but I'm on the way. You ain't take risks, cause you too afraid. I'ma just eat till I'm overweight. On the way. On the way.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. I am your host, Xavier Miller, sitting here with my co-host, Deanna Kent,
What's up, everybody?
And today, just to get right into it, today we have another super special guest. This guy, he's on fire now. I see him, somebody reposting or reposting or retweeting, retagging his stuff, like literally like every single day. And it's dope because the information he's putting out there is super dope, and he's making you think. He's making our community think forward, so I really love to see what he's doing out here. And he's the founder of Tide Capital Investment Club. He's also the founder of Tide Acquisitions, which they acquired 6 rental properties in 1 year. And his name is Charles Oglesby, and y'all might know him as Tide Millionaire. Welcome to the show, bro.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, definitely. It's definitely a pleasure for having you on. Like I said, I always... like I see somebody retweeting your stuff like every single day, man, all day. So it's like, I'm like, yeah, we definitely got to do one with him, man. He giving out game, man. But just to get right into it, so like, what was your route with like you being like so financially literate and so business minded? Like, what's the root of that?
Man, what's the root? You know, I would say is this. When I was growing up, we always would drive around really nice neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so we're always going, like we're in San Diego, so we would always go to Del Mar. We would always hang out in La Jolla. We would always hang out in nice stores like Neiman Marcus, Nordstrom. Yeah. Yep. Always go to nice restaurants. And so it kicked in me. I was like, I really like this lifestyle. I want to be able to live like this. And so... you have to then kind of reverse engineer that lifestyle. So I started seeing like I'll never forget. One time we went to this boat dealership, and I'm walking around the boat dealership, and I asked the guy who was selling the boat. I was like, "What kind of people buy these boats?" He was like, "Oh, business owners, doctors, lawyers, those kind of people." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay, all right." And so I was in San Diego again, and I was walking around because I always there's this Grant Cardone quote. He says, "Shop outside of your reach." Yeah. I always shop outside of my reach. I was in Newport Beach, and I was at the Rolls Royce dealership, walking around the Rolls Royce dealership, walking the Ferrari dealership. I always put myself in that environment because I know that's the life that I want.
Mm.
And so, I was in downtown LA. I was looking at this nice condo, nice penthouse, and I asked the lady the same day. I was like, what kind of people own these kind of condos? And she told me, investors, business owners, professionals. And so it just kind of kicked a spark in me. And so from there, the ball starts turning, and then you get access to different books. You reach that Poor Dad, reach that Poor Dad, reach to other books, reach to other books, other books, other books. And so it really was just seeing the lifestyle that I wanted and then trying to figure out how to get to that lifestyle. And I think that's really what kicked off, what sparked it. And the spark is just growing into a whole bunch of different things.
That's very interesting because I definitely agree with like putting yourself at a place where even though you're not there like physically, but putting yourself there mentally first. Mm-hmm. And then that's right. How it like manifests into the physical later. So that's really dope. Was it a time like prior to that where you like, because I know me, like before I became like really financially literate, I went through a phase where I was like really just wilding out. So did you go through a phase like that too?
I would really say that my relationship with money didn't really mature until I matured.
Mm.
So. It's really crazy because there's two different levels. There's like the aspiration to get a lot of money, and there's the aspiration to be wealthy, and there's two different things. And I got connected with a substantial Jewish real estate investor worth about $200 million, but he's worth a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to just get around him, and I actually started to work for him for free. And I always tell people, like, work for free. I was working for free with the law degree, working for this guy because I needed to be connected to him.
Yeah.
And working with him, seeing him day to day, I realized the guy makes a lot of money, but he doesn't spend a lot of money. And so my relationship with money, I think, changed a little bit older than it should have. Because, I mean, there's phases. So, like, as I was growing, I was becoming less and less reckless. So in my 20s, very reckless. Early 20s, very, very reckless. Very flashy. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was like 18, 19, 20, I had a Honda Civic. I put rims on it. I had the beat on it. I was riding around with my windows rolled down, thinking I was the man, wanted everybody to see me. Uh-huh. And I was at college, and these dudes jacked me. They like broke into my car late at night, took my subs, took my deck, stripped the car. It was terrible. Wow. And so I realized, like, you can't be flashy. You have to, if you want to keep your stuff, you can't be flashy. And so that was like one phase of me kind of being more mature about my money. The next phase was probably like mid-20s. And I started realizing, like, my spending has a large part of me not accumulating wealth, because it's not a matter of you just making the money. You have to keep the money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us focus on getting money, not keeping money. And so, like, I started to realize, like, okay, I'm spending my money looking like money, and that's why I don't have money. It's not that I'm not making money. It's not that I'm not earning money. I'm just letting it go out the door.
Right.
So that was in the next phase. And then I would say around now, my goal is, you start doing deals just for the sake of doing deals. We're not even doing deals for the sake of spending the money. We're doing the deal because it's a good deal. It just happens to make us money. And then we just put that money to the side and take it to the side. So I think that my relationship and my knowledge on money has grown gradually. And now I'm at a point where it's just, we're just doing good deals because it makes sense, not because it could potentially pay for a trip, or it could potentially pay for some shoes, or potentially pay for some things.
All right. The long-term mentality.
Yeah. I would say so, but it's not even really like a long-term mentality. It's just it's an investor mentality. And that's a conversation on episode 95, where you do deals for the sake of doing deals. I'm listening to this book, the Warren Buffett book, and he would literally, and I wasn't going to tell anybody this, but he would literally buy businesses so he could invest harder. Not buying businesses so he can retire. He would buy businesses so that then he has $200 million to invest into this next opportunity. Mm. And so it's a different mindset. It's you're not getting money to buy things. You're getting money to have things. You're getting money to retain things. You're getting money so that you can acquire more things for your family legacy. It's just a different mindset that I've grown into at this age, because I've seen somebody who can literally make $10 million a year and still wear the same watch, still wear the same shirt, still drive the same car, and just come to work like it's another day.
Yeah, he's not like type of way about
Yep, that's very true. Cause like I always tell a story about how I was in Silicon Valley and I met this dude that was worth $200 million. He was worth $200 million. People was telling me he was worth $100 million. Then some people were saying $200 million. But I was saying, like, I didn't know until like after that I had the conversation with him. While I was talking to him, like, nothing about his appearance gave off the impression that he had money at all. And then so he had like on a gray hoodie, just like a regular, he had like a Coors Light t-shirt on. So I'm just talking to him, thinking he's a regular guy. I leave the conversation and people are like, man, you know who that is? He worth so-and-so. I'm like, really? I'm like, damn, that's crazy. So what would you say is like what gets people to that mindset? Do you think it's just maturing over time, or is it just like, what do you think it is?
I think it's the people that you're around. Okay. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what age you are, the reason why I was spending is because I was around spenders. The reason why I was flashing was because I was around flashy people. And so I always tell people, one of the best things you could do, the reason why Tide Capital has been blowing up is because I went and I worked on weekends for a black business owner in Los Angeles. And there's something you get when you're around somebody all the time and you see them go through good situations, bad situations, stressful situations, happy situations, and you see how they react, versus if you just say, you're my mentor, let me call you once a week. It's not the same. And I did that twice. When I got out of law school, I said, okay, the next goal is net worth. And so I've told people, like, net worth is the new benchmarks. Net worth is the new degrees. And so my goal was to, at that point, start getting educated and working with millionaires. So I went and worked with an African-American millionaire who owns her own business, and I went and worked with a Jewish guy. Both for not what it should have been worth, but the value that I took out of that conversation, that relationship, elevated everything that I'm doing. And so I would say that you have to get around the right people, even if you have to work for free, even if you have to work for less than your worth, even if you have to I'm not sure where I was going with that, but a lot of people, I think that's what you got to change your circle. It's really the key is changing your circle. If your parents don't got it like that, then you can have certain conversations with them, but you can't have all the conversations with them. And what you'll find is as you start to take off, they'll kind of come alongside and they'll listen to you. But if you guys are just existing in the same environment and you're trying to tell them what they should be doing, they're not going to listen to you, especially if you're outnumbered. And I think that's one of the most unfortunate things is when you see the light, you're going to be around people who don't see the light. And so they're going to make it seem like you are crazy and not that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's a fact.
That's a fact. And a question I always like asking people that's really doing good things out here is, do you feel like it's an obligation for you to give back to your community?
I don't know if I like the idea of giving back as it exists.
Okay.
A lot of people think that giving back is
money.
I don't really know of a good example. I think, right, money, but it's like, say, for example, you make it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And grandma, she's not doing well. And you're like, oh, grandma, I'm going to go buy you a car. Oh, grandma, I'm going to buy you some groceries. Or, oh, whoever in the street, like Cousin Pookie, I'm going to take care of this for you. I don't think that helps them. I'm trying to kind of create a way where you can give back, but also improve things for people, because it's not the money, it's the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys know this. So it's like, mm-hmm. if I'm only giving you money, you got the same mindset, nothing's changing for the community.
Nothing at all.
6 months, you're going to be in the same situation. So I think that there has to be a better way. I don't know what that way is. I just know that the current way, I don't really agree with it. And so, I mean, one of the things I found in doing what we do is when you do good for people and you change their mindset, you change their circumstances, it's profitable. It's highly profitable to improve things for other people. And so that's kind of what we do with investing. I don't think we're giving back per se by investing in the inner city, but we are.
Right.
And I think that that's kind of how I want to focus on giving back, is by investing back. I want to make it a mutually beneficial relationship where I'm giving you something, but I'm getting a return on this investment, and you're getting something by this investment. And when we take that approach, I think we'll get a lot more people giving back, because it's not a give. It's more of an investment. Mm. And I had this conversation on the last show where you don't realize it, but by giving, you gain. And so it's not a gift. I'm not giving you anything, but improving things for other people is, in effect, giving back, but it's also very profitable. An example is, when I used to work for that firm with a Jewish guy, I never knew this existed, but there is this such thing, you guys might know this, it's called low-income housing tax credits, where if you put low-income housing in the inner city, the government's going to subsidize that investment. And there are people who are making millions of dollars who don't look anything like the people in that community who are providing low-income housing, which is, in effect, giving back, and they're getting rich in the same process. And that's where our focus has to be. Don't just give back and then keep them broke.
Right.
Get back, make money, you help them, and in doing so, you're going to improve your community long-term, not just in the short-term.
Yeah.
I really like that mentality on it, because I always had, like, that inner struggle with it, too, because it's like, I want to give back the right way, but I don't want to aid in you being dependent on me to just give, and you do nothing in return. So I've kind of always had that battle with it, but I like taking that mentality and looking at it as rather an investment. So if I give you something, I expect something in return too. For, you know, because I'm out here working hard, and I feel like if I'm going to give back, you got to, you know, do something too. You should be out here working hard as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I don't like about this idea of giving back is it kind of creates this savior complex.
Yeah.
People are waiting. They're waiting like, oh, LeBron, you made it. Cool, come save us. And I read this book. I reference a lot of books whenever I do interviews, because everything I do is book-based. But I read this book called The Jewish Phenomenon, and I'm not sure if it's that book or a book called The Money Code, which is really good, and there's also a book called The Investment Code, and they're all Jewish-related books.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I really relate to Jews is because they went through a similar struggle and oppression, mm-hmm. and they found a way to win despite. And I think a lot of what they've done can translate into African-Americans, because I that's a different tangent, but what I want to say is the Jewish people don't, they're not looking for one MLK. They're not looking for one LeBron James. They're not looking for one savior. Each of them wakes up every single day and tries to be the LeBron James for their community. It tries to be the MLK for their community. So they're constantly improving. And I think that that is so dope to me, and it also explains why they're winning across the board.
Yep, I agree. And we was just, that's the conversation that we were just having the day before yesterday. We was driving out to San Francisco, and I was saying how, in my opinion, our community is the only, we the only people where we look for like one savior. And I'm like, if we just have one savior, and that savior, something happens, then what's going, like, the rest of us?
Right.
Exactly. I'm like, the rest of us, what you think is going to happen to the rest of us? But so, another question I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned you were in law school. What made you want to go to law school?
So when I wasn't in law school, I had an undergrad degree in finance. I started working in financial advising. So to give you guys some background, I got out of college. I worked for Edward Jones. I got my Series 7, Series 66 licenses, life insurance licenses. And I did that. And then from there, I went to private banking, which is really dope. Yeah. And there, I was only working with clients who had over $250,000 in assets or more, still licensed, still selling stocks, still selling mutual funds, all that good stuff. And I was around a lot of financial advisors who all wanted to be lawyers. They dressed like lawyers, they carried bags like lawyers, they did all this stuff so that they could give off this image as though they're attorneys. And I would say that I wanted to go to law school because I needed to get my income up even higher, because by getting my income higher, I can invest harder. My goal was always to get to the BNI quadrant. I read the cash flow quadrant really, really early in life, a little too early. So I think it kind of made me crazy. It made me not like jobs that much. But I knew I had to, my goal was always to be a business owner and an investor. Never wanted to be an employee, never wanted to be a minion. And so I knew if I don't have a lot of family who's going to give me a bunch of money, I needed to earn that money. And so getting into law school, getting a law degree was going to help me get my income to the level, because I'm not a salesperson. If I was a salesperson, if I had that personality, if I was an extrovert, if I was really outgoing and I could sell my way to it, I would do that, but I wasn't that guy. And so I knew I had to be able to get six figures, high six figures, and do it so I can then invest harder. So it really was just an investment play. It was strategically positioning myself to invest. But as I've gotten older, I've realized, like, you don't even need that, but it does help. Because I think that it's kind of like I started also doing research. And so I would do research, and I would, every time I find like a successful person, I always Wikipedia them. Always.
Yeah, me too.
You got to find out what they did so that you can do it. Mm-hmm. And I kept coming across the same thing. Lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. Even if they weren't practicing law, a lot of them are lawyers. Sam Zell is a lawyer. Donald Sterling's a lawyer. Of course, the Obamas are both lawyers. Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney is a lawyer. Almost any notable person was a lawyer. And I was like, okay, so the law degree is going to help me even if I don't practice law. So let me go ahead and just add this tool to my belt and go forward. Because what I'm finding is the more valuable you are, the more wealthy you become. And a lot of people, they want to take the shortcuts and they want to do the no money down method, the no credit method. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a cap to how high you can go without having the actual skills and credentials backing you. And so for me, I wanted to go and get the skills and credentials so that then my value rises, so that then I can just make money in multiple ways. So for me, even if, like, I always tell people, like, once you have a law degree, you can always make money. Like, I make money consulting. I make money on my job. I make money investing. I make money selling products. I make money on my podcast. I make money, all these different streams of income. But each credential allows me to make more money. And now I'm in school to get an MBA, and even the MBA is refining me. So a lot of people don't like education. A lot of people, there's this really big conversation on the internet, like, oh, college isn't worth it. Yeah, if you get a BS degree.
Right.
Yeah. If you get a BS degree, nothing's worth it.
Yeah.
But if you get, like, my sister's studying to be a nurse, and she's like, oh, I got to take on $50,000 worth of debt, but I'm going to be making this much a year.
Okay.
And I'm not going to have any worries. And so I always tell people, like, where is your wealth mindset if you're afraid of $100,000 of debt? It can't be that high. Because you can't be aiming for millions and be afraid of $100,000. Like, I think that we got to, like, expand our think, blow our think. But law school for me was a tool in the belt. it was a very miserable experience because I've always been a business owner, always been an investor mindset, but I knew it was getting me close to the to where I wanted to be, which is raising my stature as a professional, also helping me see the landscape because, I mean, law is integrated into everything that you do.
Yep.
So I had to also have that knowledge as well.
Right, that's man, that's so dope, man. You got a super, super dope mindset for real, especially for you. How old are you? You like younger than 30, right?
No, I'm actually 32.
You 32? Okay.
Yeah, I'm older than 30 now.
You still young, though. You still super young. So, yeah, so that's like a lot of, I feel like a lot of these people don't get a mindset like that, so they're like 45, if ever.
Yeah.
If sometimes, ever.
You're right, if ever.
If ever.
A lot of them, it never happens. And so I wanted to get into like Tide Capital. Do you mind explaining like what Tide Capital is and like what it's about?
So Tide Capital is a growing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tide Capital. I should have a pitch, but really, it's the goal of Tide Capital is to be a holding company for everything. So holding company for assets, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So as we grow it, we're starting to realize like different things we want to acquire within it. It's real estate, it's stocks. Eventually it will also be trucking. But yep. One of my goals is to buy businesses outright. And so I've kind of been struggling with that because it's a big jump. But once I get to that point, that's where I want to be. But Tide Capital really is, it's just a vehicle, and I can't think of a good analogy for it. But it's a lot of things. Because as you know, like I have Tide Capital Investment Club, Tide Capital Acquisition. Tide Acquisitions.
Yeah.
I have Tide Consulting, Tide Capital Tax. I have Tide Capital Trucking that we're still starting. One of the things I try to do is keep consistent branding.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to keep the colors the same. I want to keep the name the same. Because if I'm promoting Tide Capital Trucking, I'm also subliminally promoting Tide Capital Investment Club or Tide Acquisitions. The more you hear Tide Capital, the more everything grows.
Mm-hmm.
The way I started it was Eric Thomas. I always felt it with this story. Eric Thomas has this video where it says how to get rich or die trying. And he said that you have to discover your gift, refine your gift, and then give your gift away. And his example of him giving his gift away is all the YouTube videos he was promoting. And so I found like I need to find something that's my gift that's going to allow me to give it away. Now, this is also in conjunction with a lot of the like Mike Brown shooting, Trayvon Martin shootings, all those shootings. And I would always see us do the same thing. Somebody gets shot, we protest, go back to business as usual. And so I told people, I was like, the reason why we have the conversation, why is this happening? Oh, well, the community's broke, we don't got any money, blah, blah, blah. People have to resort to doing crime to make money, so this. And I was like, well, there's a better way. We need to become investors, business owners, and we can improve things for ourselves. And so I kept hearing people like protest, go back to the usual, go back to business as usual. And so I said, let's create a group. We invest together and we buy stocks. We talk about stocks. We educate people on stocks. And that was a form of me giving my gift away. And so what I did is I just created this investment club, and the investment club brought people in. I didn't charge them any money. We brought in the first year, maybe like 100 people. Now it's more than 300 people. And quite honestly, it could be more if we weren't running into all these headaches of the scale aspect, because as you grow, you're going to run into different struggles. Mm. Everybody wants success, but it's very difficult and it gets expensive.
Yeah.
But so me giving my gift away was me having these conference calls, creating this platform, people to invest. And it was just crazy because we started to see the power of teamwork. Mm. We started to see when 30 people put in $100, now you got $3,000 to throw at an investment opportunity. And then the next month, another $3,000, next month, another $3,000. So we ended up having like $70,000 in the first year. And ended up getting like a 47% return on investment, kicked out some money to our partners, and did very, very well just that first year.
Wow.
And so I started thinking, like, what else can we do? And it's so multi-layered because it's a lot of things going and moving. But Tide Capital really is me giving my gift away, but also monetizing it at the same time. And then also realizing the power of teamwork, because there's really nothing that we can't do if we work together.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a point now where the only thing holding back the progress of us is making sure that we do everything in regards to keeping everything compliant. So our goal now is working with an attorney to make sure that we have everything, like all the docs, all the contracts, all the disclosures, because as we've grown and we've seen that the concept works and people want to be involved, I can raise money to buy anything I want through a DM, not even a DM, through a Snapchat, and we've done it. Like, oh, we're going to buy this house. Boom. People want to buy it. Oh, we want to buy this truck. People are bidding. They're chewing at the bit to invest and work with us. We just got to catch up because now the interest has outgrown our capacity. We've kind of outgrown our bandwidth.
Right.
Tide Capital really is just me serving the community and also making it profitable, which I think you can do.
Man,
that's, have a criteria to join your investment club, or do you accept? Like, how does one get a part of it?
That's the question I was gonna ask. Cause I was like,
right,
yeah, you go.
So in the beginning, because we're not really bringing on new members, there was no criteria, and so at first it was like, hey, we want people who can invest $100 a month, every single month, participate in conference calls, and just get involved. And the reason why I did that is because I worked in financial advising where we had minimums of $250,000.
Yep.
You see the gap. You see the gap of my people. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I can't even work with. It also kind of makes your career kind of struggle as well, because the people that you have the most immediate connection with, you can't really serve. Mm-hmm. And so you have to fit into somebody else's community. Mm-hmm. You have to fit into their network, and you have to kind of like compete with people to win over there. And so what I did is I started with $100. And then I was like, you know what, I'm going to bring it down to $25. And so we had a kid membership. We also had just a general membership. And then I was like, you know what, I don't even really care. If you have $0, just join the group chat, converse with us, follow the conversation, get on the conference calls. Because I feel like you have to give. You have to become qualified and give. And what you realize is everything catches up to you. If you're giving, if you're providing value, everything catches up to you. Because like I said, Tide Capital Investment Club has become the springboard for everything else I'm doing that's Tide Capital oriented. Tide Capital Investment Club for free allows me to do Tide acquisitions. It allows me to do Tide Capital Trucking. It allows me to do Tide Capital Tax. It allows me to do the podcast. And so I created this huge footprint. And I was telling somebody, you have to create your footprint. And by giving, it's like free samples. You give your free samples out, bring people into the brand, you get trust. Because one of the things is, yeah, it was for free, but people are learning that I can give money to Tide Capital and I'm going to get it back. He's not going to run off and go to Jamaica. He's not going to do anything crazy. And so there's a lot of things that are more important. Not more. There are a lot of things that are as important as money. One of them is experience. One of them is knowledge. One of them is confidence. And if you have all those, you're also going to make more money. And so for me, I wasn't so caught up on keeping people out as much as I was caught up on improving my community. I think that's how you give back. And one thing I tell people all the time is, I might not have made money on the investment club, but the skills that I picked up by running the investment club made me even more money in the stock market that next year. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of pressure when you put yourself on the line like that in front of all those people and you have to perform. And so you're listening to podcasts, you're reading books, you are talking to people, you're watching different shows. And so that pressure pushed me to become a better stock market investor, which then helped me make a lot of money last year. Mm-hmm. Did very well last year in the stock market and in my consulting company. So it all works together. And that's why podcasting is so great. It's free, mm-hmm. but it brings a lot of value to you. It blows your mind because we don't really connect getting money with giving something for free, but it comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it comes because it's something of value that people take and they're getting something from. Now, something I want to ask you about, because I seen this, you tweeted this a while ago, but it always stuck with me because it's like, man, that's like, I just really felt this tweet. And you said wealth is familial. So I was like, man, that's like, that's like my favorite tweet ever, because it's like, I feel like that should be, everybody should understand that wealth and poverty is like it passes down. It's like, and you have to reprogram yourself if you have that poverty mindset and your family comes from poverty. You have to reprogram your mind. And I just always like really, really felt that tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
The crazy part about it is when I used to work, when I used to work for that old Jewish guy, mm-hmm. I'd never seen anything like this before. So this guy started his company 20, 30 years ago, ran his company. His son went to SC. He brought in his son. His son's now the CEO of that company. making great money, having a bunch of people work for him. Upstairs, he has another son who wasn't really a good student. He struggled. He had to go through all these different classes in order to kind of progress financially. And what he did is his son was a tech guy. And so he allowed his son to create a tech company. And the main client for that tech company is his other son's company downstairs. And
that's
the
crazy.
The other family that I worked with, which a lot of people need to know about this family, not enough people know about this family, it's the Hawkins family, and they're out of Watts. And the daughter owns a restaurant, very successful restaurant in Watts, black-owned restaurant, black-staff restaurant. And her brother across the street owns a tax company and a 99-cent community store. She had another sister who owned the same restaurant franchise in a different part of Los Angeles. And their dad started it all. Their dad had like multiple businesses. He owned the land. He was one of the few people that didn't sell the land to the freeway when they decided to take it through LA. And you start thinking like that's familial as well, because the dad passed to the daughter, and the other daughter, I mean, the dad passed to the daughter. The daughter's daughter works for the business. She's going to take that over. And I started really seeing the key is your family. Like, you can't get well, it's really difficult to get wealthy and give your money to everybody else. It's really, and not just your money. It's like Boyce Watkins, he gave this quote. He's like, you have all these educated people, doctor, lawyer, accountant, and they have all these degrees, engineers, and what they do is they go work for a whole bunch of different other white people, different firm. And he was like, what if you brought that all under the same roof and you all built the same company? And so I'm finally getting my family to see the light, where my sister's participating in my business. My mom's participating in my business. My mom's a CPA, and she has this knowledge and this experience. And what I'm learning, what grad school is teaching me is, it's not my job to be all things to my business. I need to elevate myself to CEO status and then CEO this ship. And so now I can lean on her advice, like, oh, you think we need to do this as an LP? Cool, let's do it as an LP. Even though I might think something different, I'm gonna defer to you. And so we're in the point of bringing in a lawyer. Like, okay, I need a lawyer at all times, because there are things that I don't have the time to research. There's things that I don't have the time to try to dig into and understand. Like, you figure it out, and you just report back to me. Oh, we need a banker now. All right, cool. You, banker, come and you be a part of our team. What does a team sport, business investing or team sports? So I would say that the familial aspect is just me seeing it, getting around wealth. You get around wealth and you start seeing like, oh, you're poor because you're an individual. Oh, you're poor because you think you got to be all things. You think you got to be the smartest person on the team. Yep. You're poor because you are in competition with everybody. You're not complimenting other people. You're not helping other people. Like, I get it now, but you're not going to even see it until you get into the other circles. And sometimes you're going to have to work for those people. It's going to be difficult to just say, mentor me, coach me. You can spend a lot of money mentoring and coaching, but if you give value to them, it's the same concept, giving for free. If you give them free value, they're going to overcompensate and make sure that you get what you need to get out of that relationship. So,
wow.
That's dope. If you're going to build a team, why not start with your family, the people you trust first and foremost, and start there?
Yeah. Why? Yeah.
Another thing I noticed is you're already giving to them anyway. Like, I'm already hooking. I give a lot to my niece and nephew. And so it's like, if their mom helps me, I'm going to be given to you anyway. It's not like I have to pay double. And I've employed people who were outside of my family. And it's like Grant Cardone says. He says, if you're going to enrich anybody, at least enrich the people that are around you. Don't enrich somebody else's household. Enrich your own household.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's the hack. When I found that out, I was like, that's definitely the hack. The family is everything.
Yep.
And we listened to like a Boyce Watkins video, but I like that he said, your family members, your friends, like the people around you should be investments, not liabilities. So I always took that and ran with it. Like, all right, you know, if you're going to be around me, I'm investing in you rather just, you know, making you dependent on me and making you a liability to my life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. And so something else I want to get to that you mentioned really quick was the stock market. You said you did pretty well last year. So I wanted to ask you, because I know a lot of people that didn't do well last year. Last year was a rough year for a lot of people that I've been talking to. So I'm like, okay. So I want to ask you, like, so what are some of the tips and strategies that you like to discuss as far as stocks?
Yeah. So, you know, the reason why reading is so good is it gives you access to a lot of people that you wouldn't normally have access to. When I wanted to become a good investor, I started reading a lot of Warren Buffett.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I got introduced to Benjamin Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've read a lot of really, really good books on investing. So I always tell people, like, you got to read. And Cramer's going to teach you how to evaluate a stock, price earnings ratio, all that cool stuff, earnings per share. But the best thing that you can do is really get out there and invest. Mm-hmm. My tips are, and one thing I found that's really interesting about this tip is it's not just a stock tip. It's actually an investing tip, period. And it's that you have to, you can't buy what's popular. And I think that that's what people, most people do wrong. Is most people, they buy what they're talking about on CNBC.
Mm-hmm.
They buy even what Jim Cramer is promoting. And what you don't realize is a lot of times you're somebody's exit strategy. So that's if we kind of relate that to a flip, somebody else bought it when it was bad, brought it all the way up. Now they're saying, look at this great house that we have. It's a great company. You want to invest in it. You want to buy it. And then there's no more upside. There might be some upside in 5 to 10 years. But within the next 1 to 2 to 3 years, you're going to lose value there. And so what I did, because when I first started really investing, like investing big money, trying to make money, I would do the same thing. I was like, oh, this company is going up. I got to buy. And then I was like, hey, that strategy doesn't really work that well. Let me start buying some stuff that's not doing well and see how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find is you'll get really large outsized returns when you buy something that's been hammered. And so my strategy now is, okay, this company is a great company, but it's getting hit with bad press. An example would be Tesla. This company has a great product, but it has a terrible stock. Why is that? Maybe it's being overlooked. Let me go buy that, like Habit or Under Armour. Or I think that the tip is buy the bad and sell the good. And I think that's a much better way to say buy low, sell high. Because buy low, sell high is what everybody knows, but what they end up doing is buying high and selling low because they're buying what's hot. And so my tip is, when you see bad news, that's when you need to buy. When you see good news, that's what you need to sell. And it's the same thing is true with real estate. I tell people all the time, like, I don't buy what's popular. I don't buy what everybody likes. And, I mean, you guys are crypto guys, but that's why I didn't buy crypto. And it sounds really bad. And that's also kind of why I'm getting kind of leery of rental property investing, because I feel like it's getting a little bit too popular. And whenever I start seeing newbies, not investors, people just got a hot tip, getting rich, make a lot of money, that's a sign the market's too high.
Yeah.
That's a sign that we're in a bubble.
Yeah.
And so I would say that my tip is just buy value. And you can determine value a lot of ways, but I like to look at the chart to determine where it is in return in regards to the trend that it's following, where it is in regard to its 52-week high, 52-week low. There's a lot of things that go into it. It's not a simple analysis. You really got to live in this stuff. It's tough to make money in the stock market and just dip your toe in. You got to swim in the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
So, I mean, just basic tips. I can't even really think of too many tips, because for me, it's not so much tips as much as it's
doing.
Instinctive.
Yeah.
But one thing I do tell people is, an example would be, like, if I'm looking at a company I'm going to buy into earnings, and I'm going to look at their 3-month chart, I'm also going to look at their 1-month chart to see what kind of trend is following. And depending on a lot of factors, sometimes a stock will be running up into its three-month chart. And you have to look at, well, why is it running up into its 3-month chart? Is it because of good news? Is it because of news that they thought was bad, but actually isn't bad news? And then you have to kind of make a judgment call, like, is it going to potentially continue on that trend, or is that just a fake trend? Because in between earnings, there's a lot of chatter. So you have, like, the real numbers, and then you have to chatter on what those numbers mean, and you don't really get the reality of those numbers until the next 3-month mark.
Right.
So you have to determine, like, is the chatter real? Is the news real? And also, has it been running up too high? It's a lot that goes into it, but I would just say that reading and learning is the best thing that you can do.
Yeah, I agree, because I always tell people that. I say researching, and with stocks, being patient. Don't expect things to happen, like, literally overnight. And that's why the next question I want to ask you was, like, I want to see what your thoughts was on, because I feel like wealth is a the wealth game is a patient thing. You have to practice patience on a high on a high level. So I want to ask, what do you think about patience? What is just your mindset on that?
I think that you have to be patient, not just when you're waiting, but also when you're winning, because that's one thing I'm trying to tell, like, the partners that I'm working with. Is like, we're doing well in rental properties, but that doesn't mean you pull the money out and you go crazy. That means you're either going to stack it or acquire more. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I'm not even sure if it's really patience as much as it's just, that's just how the game is played. Like, I don't know. I mean, the question makes sense and everybody kind of gets it. It's like, if you're investing in the stock market, if you're investing in real estate, it's a long game. It's not timing the market. It's time in the market. Mm-hmm. But I think that the principle that I'm really trying to drill in now, as more people are becoming investors and more people buying trucks, as more people are buying real estate, is we have to make sure that we're preserving what we have.
Right.
We have to make sure that we're not just buying trucks, but we're keeping trucks. We have to make sure we're not just buying real estate, but we're keeping real estate. And the way you do that is by keeping cash, keeping reserves, stashing it, and not spending it on the good life, like just making money for the sake of having it. Because we don't know when the next down cycle is going to come. We just know it is going to come. And you don't want to be, a lot of people don't know is, before the last recession, there were a lot of African-American people who owned homes, who were doing well, who owned businesses. The problem is they lost them all because they were over-leveraged and they were thinly capitalized. And so as we're getting back into this, we have to still take the same approach, because if you do the same thing we did last time, where we get assets and then we don't have the cash to sustain them, we're going to be 10 years later complaining about the same things. And so for me, patience to get in, patience to stay in, it all makes sense. I 100% agree. I'm just kind of beating the drum now for saying, hey, you own these trucks. Like, don't take no vacations, man.
Right.
Don't buy no crazy. Like, you don't need to, like, do all that crazy stuff. Like, it's a different mentality. But one thing I tell people is, like, for me, money isn't something to buy things. It's money to own things.
Man.
So it's like, I can't get money and just say, okay, like, I have $10,000. What am I going to do with this? It's like, okay, I have $10,000. Like, all right, back to business.
Yep.
And that's how I've seen the millionaire do is, like, they're still working. They're not chilling.
Yep.
Even though they have, like, Grant Cardone, he's still working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, even though he's massively successful. And that's what creates generational wealth, where you've made it, and now you're working for the next generation. It's not just that your assets are working for the generation. Sometimes you might have to show up for the next generation. Mm. That's like the guy who's 70 years old, 72 years old. The dude is—he's done. His life is over. He's not even working for himself anymore. He's working for, like, his kids, kids, kids. It's kind of like what Brandon said. He's like, he wealth is when you have money for kids you don't even know, like for a family that you don't even know exists. You'll never live to see them.
Damn, yep.
And so for me, I think that, like, patience, absolutely. But I really want people to get this concept of not just getting money and pulling it, but getting money and preserving it.
Yes.
Making it permanent. That's what Boyce Walker says. You got to make your money permanent.
Permanent. Yeah, I agree 100%. And I was just talking to somebody else about this. I was saying how on Twitter a couple of days ago, I was having this debate with someone, because I was saying how I know a lot of rich, wealthy people that – Well, they don't have a lot of nice things. Now, I know a lot of people that don't have money at all, and they have a lot of nice things. So I was saying how and this guy, he was like, what? That don't make any sense. He's like, the whole purpose of having money is to buy expensive things. And I'm like, huh? I'm like, am I reading this wrong? I'm like, I don't know about you, but with me, I don't care about the material shit at all. I don't care about buying a new car. I mean, a big house is nice, fresh clothes, all that is cool, but that's not the point. That's not why I'm getting money. I'm getting money so I could literally buy my time back, and then when I get older, I can have stuff so I could pass on to my kids, my nieces, my nephews, and stuff like that. I'm not getting money so I could get out here and just buy a bunch of shit. Like, I don't, that's pointless. Why would I put in all these hours to do that?
I think
it's
just
truly
like
a mindset. It's a mindset shift.
Yeah, it's like the overall mentality in, like, this digital era that seems to be booming right now is just, you just want to look rich. You don't actually want to be rich. You want to have all these nice things. All that other stuff, like, don't matter. Like, I know when we first started pushing like financial literacy and investing. You know, like a lot of people started reaching out, but it seems like after a while, it's like, all right, like, okay, like, you know, people get to a point where it's just like, I don't want to say they don't care, but it's like they don't want to put the work in to like better themselves or know more and like, you know, expand from what they're already doing.
Yeah, that's very true. And so I want to ask, because you said a statement about rental properties and how you kind of not shifting out of them, but it's like they're real hot right now. So like, I want to ask, like, what's your why? I don't want to say why your take on that, because you already said why, but like, so what's your are you planning on coming out of them, or is like,
so when we bought our properties, we bought with knowledge that the market could shift, and so we bought a lot of single family homes that function as rental properties, knowing that in the event that people decide they want to own these homes, we can sell or finance them to them. And so for me, it was thinking multiple steps ahead, and I could have got into apartment investing, and I did. I looked at apartment investing. We haven't bought any apartment complexes, but I looked into getting into it, and the numbers didn't make any sense. The valuations didn't make sense. The cap rates were super low. In California, cap rates are like 3%. And so how do you justify making 3% of your money? You don't.
You don't, right.
Especially if the debt costs 4% to 5%, maybe more, you're losing money to own an investment.
Yep.
And so for me, that's just an indication that that market has gone crazy. And so then I start looking at other factors, and you start looking at the syndicators, and you have these newbie syndicators who they've never owned apartment complexes. They just kind of got hip to it, and they were able to raise the money and make the deal sound attractive to people who were looking for an alternative to their savings accounts that weren't paying anything. And so they were able to raise all this money, buy these low cap rate properties. And I think it's, and not only that, rents were just crazy, unjustifiably high. And what you would hear is that everybody was saying rents can only go up, which is the same thing they said about real estate prices back in 2007, 2008. So there are a lot of indicators over there that just indicated that the multifamily market was going haywire. And my theory is that if multifamily at mass is gone haywire, and it's going to have to trickle down to all these people who are buying rental properties, just banking on them being rental properties. And so it's kind of this concept, the same concept. I should really write a book on principles of investing that just transpire greater than just the stock market, or translate greater than just real estate. But it's the same concept. The same stock concept is that if everybody's doing it, if it's hot, I don't want it. And so I love rental properties. It's the dopest thing ever to get a check for doing nothing, especially once you get it to the point where it's just kicking and you get really good tenants who don't even call you. But when newbies and novices start doing stuff, making a lot of money doing it, I always get leery. And that doesn't mean that I leave the market altogether. That means that we're saying, hey, this is really doing as well, but we can't spend the cash. We can't distribute the cash because we don't know what's going to happen. And I don't want us to be over here where the market's turned against us, and we don't have the money to fight our battles, because money in a lot of ways is ammunition. And so I think that we've thought that through in a lot of ways. We've also thought that through in a lot of like how we haven't leveraged our properties. We own all our properties free and clear. We pay for them in cash. And so I think that that's another step. A lot of, and that's one thing that I think maybe education does, is it really made me think through the whole process of us doing this. Like how, not just buying it, but protecting it, not just acquiring it, but thinking 2-3 steps ahead, like what are we gonna do if this happens? What are we gonna do if this happens? We're gonna do if this happens. So we've done all of our due diligence to the point where if rental properties turn against us, at least we'll be good. I'm trying to make sure that everybody else is good, because one of the unfortunate things is if you only know what somebody's told you, you don't know what's gonna happen when something changes. Because I always tell people, like for me, it's not the rental property, it's the thought that got us to the rental property. It's not the trucks, it's the thought that gets us to the trucks. That's what's most valuable. That's what the experience is going to give you. Because if you only know what somebody told you, what are you going to do in 3 years when the market looks different? You're going to wait for them to tell you something else? You got to get the education and the experience
right now
to make your own investment decisions ahead of the market. Because like I said, like you make your money buying the bad, but if you don't even know if it's bad, or if you don't know how to qualify what's bad, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to buy in markets that you shouldn't be in. You're going to buy at the inverse. You're going to buy bad markets you shouldn't be in. You're going to buy good markets you shouldn't be in. You're going to miss that middle sector. So I would say that I think that rental property is great. We just got to be very strategic and intelligent about how we're going to keep what we buy.
Wow, that's important, and that's dope for everybody that's listening. That's really dope information for real. And another question I want to ask was as far as the recession. Like I tweeted out yesterday, like what are some of the strategies that people are doing right now? Are they holding, staying liquid, waiting for the recession to happen, or are they still investing heavily, or are they doing both to some degree? And that's what I want to ask you. So what are you doing, and when do you think the next recession will be? If there will be one.
I think what's very interesting about recessions is whenever we think recession, we think the last recession.
Right.
And that wasn't a very common recession. That was like a great recession. That was damn near a depression. People don't really call it a depression, but I think it was a depression. And I think that one of the worst things you can do is try to time the recession. And that's why when I watch Gary Vee and he's like, yeah, I'm all liquid because the recession's coming. Like, you don't know that.
Right.
Think about it. When 2009 hit, was anybody expecting 2009 to hit? Nobody was.
Nobody was.
2008, nobody. It was the best of times.
Yep.
Nobody. And so for me, it's like, in order for it to be a recession, people can't predict it. My thing is that a recession is going to happen when people think it can't get any better than it's getting. A recession is going to happen when there's this irrational exuberance where people are buying. The recession that I see coming, and I don't know what's going to come, is in multifamily property and people who are doing BRRRR investing. Are you guys familiar with BRRRR investing?
With BRRRR investing?
Right. So people who are buying rental properties. And so what they'll do is they have a down payment. They'll buy one property. They'll renovate that property and they'll refinance it, take all the cash out. And they use that same down payment to buy another one. And so there's people who are building up this empire where they can buy properties with one down payment. So they own 15, 20, 30 properties with 30 mortgages, and they're renting it out. And it's a great rehab, but if the market turns against them, if the rents turn against them, they're not cash flowing anymore.
Right.
That's all good when they project rents are going to continue to go up, but that's not realistic. So the recession, I don't think that it's really even wise to try to predict it. I think you have to invest intelligently. And so that means buying good deals. That means making sure that you preserve the cash from the deals that you do get. That means that the capital gains that you're getting, like, you can harvest your gains, but don't like, my thing is, I really like Gary Vee's principle of not spending money on dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's not even a Gary Vee principle, it's a Jewish principle. And Jews don't spend money on dumb stuff. They're prudently frugal, selectively extravagant. So you can be extravagant every so often, but your lifestyle shouldn't be extravagant across the board. And so you see guys who have Gucci this, Fendi this, gold all here. Like, that's not prudently. That's doing too much. You're going to lose. So you can have a nice watch. I'm not saying deny yourself altogether, but I'm saying that your life shouldn't be based on splurging. So my strategy is to buy intelligently. I know the number we need to buy a house at. And I tell the guys that I'm working with, I'm like, you know my number. And I'd explain to them, I told them, I was like, if I buy, like, I need a 40% return. If I buy over this number, I'm not going to get a 40% return. Every single dollar over that decreases my ROI. Yep. And I told him that, and I think it finally resonated with him. So you have to buy intelligently. You got to rehab intelligently. You got to rent intelligently. It's about being an intelligent investor, not just being an investor. And interestingly enough, the intelligence comes by doing, not by just a bunch of reading. I've read a bunch of real estate books. I really didn't learn the business until I got into the business. But then once you get in there, you start to realize it's not as difficult as you think it is. It's just a different, you got to get your sea legs. And once you get your sea legs, you start to kind of get a feel for how things go. And then you become a professional investor. You only do your first deal once. After your first deal, you're a professional investor. So, I just say, be really intelligent about your finances. Make sure that you're not making a bunch of money and then spending it. And then make sure that you're always on the offense. Make sure you're always buying good deals, still continue to acquire more, but intelligently. If you acquire intelligently and you preserve your cash, it doesn't matter if a recession comes.
Pretty much you'd be recession-proof at that point. I was talking to Andre Hatchett a couple days ago, and that's what he was telling me. He was like, man, my businesses are recession-proof. And I was like, man, that should be the stunting that everybody want to do. Everybody want to stunt with a Gucci belt or whatever. But stunting sent a statement like that, that's real, like, flexing to me. Mm-hmm. And, but in a dope, not in an arrogant way, in a dope way. And a couple more questions I have before we, like, wrap up, because I know you busy, and I know we could have this good conversation all day. But a couple more questions I had was, so what's the... what is the difference between like Tide Capital and like Tide Capital Acquisitions and Tide Capital Tax?
The partners.
Okay. So different partners for each?
That's the right. So I don't want to butcher the quote, but basically I was watching this post and he was saying something along the lines of like, entrepreneurs don't need certification. Employees need certifications, but entrepreneurs don't. I just need strategic partnerships. And so for me, Tide Capital Tax is a strategic partnership. Okay. I bring in the clients, I market and brand my business, which also adds another layer to my business, which makes my business more refined and rounded, because it's really just symbiotic. It's all related to business and finance. Taxes is related to business and finance. If I don't have a tax arm, I'm not completely serving my clients. If I have all these LLC and consulting clients, but I don't have taxes to help them, it's kind of like, it's like malpractice almost. Mm. And so I partner with a few different people and they provide the tax services. I provide the brand and the advertising. Tide Acquisitions is different in that it's partnerships per property. And so each property is a partnership. We buy a property, then we set it up as an LLC, and then we acquire the property and we cash flow the property and people get paid accordingly. But it's all underneath the Tide Acquisitions umbrella, which is also under the Tide Capital umbrella. Tide Capital Investment Club is the stock market aspect of it, but it's free. We don't charge anything, except now we're starting to charge admin fees because there's certain things we need, like we need to pay for the phone service, we need to pay for the tax returns, we need to pay for accounting. Like, as we've grown, we've had to actually bring in more structure. Mm. So the difference really is just the people that we work with. Tide Consulting is really just me, but that team is expanding. But one of the things is, I read this book and he was talking about how the skills you have in your 9-to-5 can double your income if you market them to the world. And so that's what I did both ways. I marketed to the world, I doubled my income. And so the skills, right. And I always tell my mom this too. I'm like, you are a CPA, like, you do taxes for them, you can do taxes on yourself for the side. Mm-hmm. And so that's really is, I just try to keep consistency in branding. I try to keep the colors the same. I try to keep the name the same, because it's really like, if you go to a grocery store, the grocery store doesn't just sell bread. They sell milk, eggs, fish, mm-hmm. produce. And so each brand for me is a product. It's not a company. It kind of is, but it's kind of not. It's like I just had to put something in there, so I tie everything together. So you have Tide Capital Consulting, Tide this, Tide this, Tide this, Tide this, Tide this, and it all promotes the same thing. We keep consistency, but it's really just like this big suite of products that I can market to the world. That all started from expanding my footprint and getting the trust of the community through the investment club.
Mm. Do you primarily buy your properties in California, or do you buy like all across the U.S.? Yeah.
I don't buy a damn thing in California.
Hey, I don't blame
you. I just had to clarify. I don't want to buy nothing
out here. It's so overpriced out here. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Overpriced it is.
Right.
That's crazy.
I had a conversation with somebody, and all right, so when I first decided I wanted to become a real estate investor, I was in law school looking for properties. I thought I had to go the conventional way. I thought I had to get a mortgage, take on debt,
right,
do all that stuff. And so we did it, got pre-qualified. We're looking at properties. And I came across this really dope deal. The home, I knew it was undervalued. If you look at a bunch of homes long enough, you start to be able to spot things that are undervalued and analyzing deals as well. So every night, just looking. And I came across this deal. I was in law school with a girl who actually had a broker's license. And so I said, hey, I want to buy this house. It was a 2-bedroom condo in Highland, California, and it was being marketed for like 30 grand. And this is like 4 or 5 years ago. And if you look at Highlands is actually a nice area. Mm-hmm. This was just like a niche. It was kind of like a little ghetto within a nice area. And so we put an offer in, but because the market, because that apartment or that housing complex was more than 50% renter occupied, you couldn't get an FHA loan. You couldn't get a loan on it at all. Mm. And so she told me, she said, hey, why don't you get 10 people or get 5 people who have $10,000 and you guys just buy it in cash? And I was like, that's a dope idea. And so we ended up not scrapping that idea. And I started to get the ball rolling. And people ended up backing out. They didn't have the money at the last minute. And that was my first kind of foray into pulling money together with people. I started looking for properties out of state. And so we started looking for properties in Atlanta because I had family in Atlanta and I thought I had to have a home base in Atlanta. And so we were looking at properties. We're almost going to buy one. And then I think like everybody got spooked at the last minute, started asking crazy questions. And so we ended up backing out of that deal. And so I just kept pushing. Because it's like, if you want something, you're going to find a way. If not, you're going to find an excuse.
Yep.
And so I started looking all across the country, and I started hearing about, and I don't tell people, I think you might know, but I started hearing about Detroit. And I started looking at the properties in Detroit and hearing about all the people that are investing in Detroit. And I was like, there might be something to this Detroit thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking at properties, started talking to wholesalers, and we came across a house that was listed for like $18,000. It looked great. An old lady lived there. She passed away. She didn't pass away in the house, but she passed away. New, nice carpet. Nothing was damaged. Didn't look crazy. And I was like, this is nice right here. 17 grand. This is cool. And so I talked to the wholesaler. And I talked to my partners. We bought the property and we rented it for $700 to this lady. And she paid every single month. Everything was cool. And I was like, I thought they said you couldn't make money in Detroit. I thought they said that Detroit was bad. I thought they said that your homes are going to get broken into in Detroit. What's
right,
really going on?
Right.
And so I started, one thing I did is I got in contact with other investors. And so I went onto a Facebook group and I said, hey, who here is investing in Detroit? And so I met this guy and his name is Kelvin. And he's still my mentor to this day. I talked to him like 2-3 times a week. He owned 15 homes out there. And I was like, people don't just buy 15 homes if it's a bad investment. If it's a bad investment, you're not even going to buy one. You might buy one and just be pissed off.
Be pissed, right.
So I had a conversation with him, started working with him, and I found another deal. I found house number two. Mm. House number two, actually, the way I found house number two is I found another house because we were in the process of trying to buy turnkey because we're beginning investors. We were super scared. We're like, we don't want to do no repairs, nothing. It's got to be turnkey. Our first property, all we did was clean the carpet and put a tenant in there. The second property, it looked good. It seemed to be refreshing, to be painted, some little basic stuff. But the way I found that is I was trying to call on turnkey properties. And I called, and I was talking to the guy, and he was like, yeah, I actually bought that home, rehabbed it. He started telling me the numbers and breaking it down. He bought the house for, like, super cheap, rehabbed it for, like, super cheap, but it looked great. He sold it for, like, however much he sold it for, but I kept in contact with him. So I was like, hey, you come across anything else, let me know. And so he came across this other house. It was in good condition. It's the second house we bought. And we actually bought that house for $10,000. And we put $10,000 in rehab into it. Rented it out for $700 a month. And we did that. And we're like, this thing is still working, man. This is crazy. How's this thing still working? They said it can't work.
Exactly.
And so then we came across this super steal of a deal. We bought this house for $11,000. And it already had a tenant inside of it. And this is our first experience of buying something with a tenant inside of it. And so that was an experience because everybody says, don't inherit tenants.
Oh,
inherit
yeah.
Tenants bad, blah, blah, blah. And so we just bought the house anyway. Bought it for $11,000, and we're getting comps now that the homes in that market are selling for like $30, $35. And so we already made like $25 in equity, but it still cash flows. We've made our money back. We're not only like the market. And this is when I started to realize, like, you got to buy what they hate, man. If you are buying what they love, you are lunch. If you're buying what they love, you're their exit strategy. And that's why I stopped buying turnkey, because they've taken all the profit out of it. Mm. We started realizing as we got more experience, as we started to see, like, what's the worst that can go wrong? We've lived through the worst that can go wrong. We know the most expensive things to repair in a rental property are the roof and the furnace. And that's it. Like, all that other scary stuff they try to spook people out of for being into the rental property market, we've lived through it. We know it. It's not a deal, big deal anymore. So anyway, I forgot what the question was. But I would just say that you gotta want something so bad that you're willing to do whatever you gotta do to get it. Okay. And I live in California. I've been to Detroit maybe 3 or 4 times, and we bought 2 homes before I even went to Detroit. But a lot of that scary stuff is just meant to keep you small. A lot of that stuff they tell you not to do is meant to keep you small. It's meant to keep you clocking in, going to a 9-to-5, doing what they tell you to do. It's really not that difficult. And there's so much that I could talk about on this, but
yeah.
I would just say that I forgot the question.
I don't remember either.
Just take the leap, man. Yeah. Everybody take the leap. Stop listening to people who don't have what you want.
Yeah, man. That's mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you something. Where did the name Todd come from? Because I thought that was your name at first.
I get that a lot.
I thought that was your name.
A lot.
So I'm like, what made him pick that as like and run with it?
So I have a I'm not sure if it's a what is it called? An acronym?
Okay.
But what I say Todd stands for is together we can overcome deterrent and distractions.
Mm.
And I feel like a lot of times, unfortunately, first it emphasizes the togetherness. The other is that overcoming. And the other is that there are a lot of deterrents because there's a lot of people who you give them the light and they want to like throw sand on the light, or they want to debate the light. They want to argue the light. And so we are constantly fighting against what people say is not possible. They say it's too hard. What they say you shouldn't be doing. What they say is all this stuff. And I just kind of got tired of it. But a long time ago, the real origin of Todd as the name is, and it's a really silly story. That's why when people ask, it's like, it's really not that. But we went to Vegas. We all went to Vegas, and everybody was like, oh, I'm gonna be this guy this week. I'm going to change my name to this guy.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, like, I'm going to change my name to Hunter Todd for the weekend. And so I just kind of carried the name Hunter Todd. And I started a necktie company, and the necktie company was Hunter Todd Neckwear. But, and this is actually kind of good. The thing that I learned, what gives me an advantage with Todd Capital is that I have the education and the experience that kind of makes me be able to be that guy where people can look at me and say, okay, I trust his opinion. I trust his judgment. Whereas when I was doing neckties, I'm not a fashion guy. I'm not going to be at your fashion show. I'm not going to be doing all this fashion stuff. I just wanted to sell ties because I wanted to go into a business. I want to have a business for myself. I want to make money. And so what I realized is your business has to be deeper than just making money.
Yeah.
In order for it to be really successful, your business has to be waking up at 7 o'clock to talk real estate and business. If you don't love it that much,
exactly.
It's going to be really difficult. Right, it's going to be very difficult for you to be successful because it's going to require that much of you. And so for people listening, like, don't do a business to make money. Like, you might get lucky and it might work. But doing a business that's in line with who you are as a person is going to take you so much further because it's that hidden ROI. Yeah, you're going to make money, but you're also going to make a difference. And you're also going to be fulfilled. It's about being fulfilled, not just getting money. It's like if you can be fulfilled, if you can change. I love it when I get DMs. Somebody was like, man, I was listening to your show, watching your content. I bought this property. I'm buying this. I'm buying that is the ROI for me
mm-hmm.
because for me, it's bigger than just like, did I make money? Did I improve the community? Am I being the MLK for my community? Like, that's what I want. If I can be the MLK and not just like me being the only, the savior,
right.
I just want to be one of the many MLKs.
Right.
Like, that's what I care about. So the name Hunter Todd is silly, but one thing that, I just kind of ran with it, just keeping it consistent. Because one thing I've also noticed is that in certain ways with the business, people don't do business with the person, they do business with the service. And so I don't want it to be Oglesby Capital where people are buying into me. I want them to buy into the product. And that's one thing I found is when I took my face off of my company Instagram, the Instagram started to blow up. And that's one of the things I learned in working with the business owner at Watts. Is I always thought like business is like a job where people, if a lot of people like you, then a lot of people are going to give you money. But it's not about that. It's about your product. If a lot of people like your product, they're going to give you money. And it's a lot easier to market a faceless, nameless product than it is to market yourself because they might not like where your nose looks. They might not like whatever.
Exactly.
But a lot of ways the way you get rich is by creating products people love, not by creating a name and a face and a personality that they love. I think that's what I wanted to focus on, is separating myself from the product and just strictly marketing the product.
Wow.
That's dope. That's,
man, you got so much game to be like so young, for real. Like you got a lot of game. I know you could go on all day long. But we gonna get ready to wrap up in a second. And I just wanted to like really say I really appreciate all you doing, bro. Like I definitely like want you to keep it up, because you putting a lot of people on good information, man. You helping change a lot of people's lives and putting all these gems out here. We definitely appreciate you, man. Like, for real.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. And if you could say one thing, because people hit me up all the time. They always message me and they like, man, I want to get started in real estate. I'm working this job right now. I want to start investing. I want to start getting into stocks, real estate, start my own business. What should I do? Like, any tips? Like, how can I get started in investing? Blah blah blah. I always say like, just get started. Like, do research and get started. But what would you say to those people?
I get that question. The answer that I tell them is get a partner.
And why is that?
There's this quote that it says that if there's something that you want but you don't have it, you might be missing a partner. And one thing that I found, because I wanted to get into real estate by myself as well. My goal was like, I got to get my credit this, I got to get my savings up, I got to get all this stuff. And what you don't realize is, well, not you realize this, but what a lot of listeners don't realize this is the person that they want you to become in order to get into real estate or to get into trucking or to get into business is usually the person that you don't become until after you get into real estate and after you get into business and after you get into trucking. And so there's this hurdle, and you break that hurdle with teamwork. And one of the things I realized when I was working in banking is so dope because it allows you to get under the hood of people's finances. If you don't work in banking, you just see what they got on, and you just make assumptions. When you work in banking, you literally see what they're doing. You can look under the hood and see what their checking accounts and their savings accounts and their investment accounts and their credit card accounts and all that stuff looks like. And one thing I realized is the people that were doing really well were connected. And so you would see the agents come in and all their accounts would be connected. Mother, father, son, brother, all connected. They're not individuals. Or you look in, you see Middle Eastern people, all connected. Jewish people, all connected. The thing we're missing is teamwork. The thing we're missing is partnering up. The thing we're missing is not thinking that we have to be all things to everybody. It's an employee mindset. It's a job mindset. And I wish I had the quote. I was just reading this book yesterday. It's called Why A Students Work for C Students. And he was talking about, as an employee, you have to be the most educated person. If you're going to get paid, it's based on your skill set. Either you know it or you don't. If you don't, you're not getting paid for it. If you do, then you are getting paid for it. As a business owner and investor, it's your job to be the synergistic glue to keep things together. It's just your job to get the pieces together. Like, it's not your job to be the contractor, to do the demo, to do the marketing. It's your job to create an opportunity for everybody else to win. And it's kind of like the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors win because they're a great team, not because they have the best player. And that's what we have to, like, we don't all need to be LeBron. We just got to be Klay. We just need a Klay Thompson who can strictly hit the three-pointer, and that's all he does is hit a three-pointer. We need Steph, who can do what he does. We need KD, who can do what he does. When you work as a team, it allows people who aren't even as good to still get a chip. Like, you got Draymond Green. He's not a very good player.
That's deep.
Every year. And that's what we need, because everybody's not going to be you. Everybody's not going to be me. But if they're on the team, they get to get the chip. And so for me, getting started for sure. And that's 100%. I believe in that 100%. You got to get started, because a lot of people want their first deal to make them rich. And the first deal is just going to give them the experience to get rich. And a lot of people are like, they don't want to make any mistakes. And the mistakes are going to guide you to where you want to go. So getting started 100%, you have to get started. But if you're having a hard time getting started, you might need a partner, because experience with a partner is the same experience. you're still going to get the knowledge, and the knowledge and the experience is what's going to make you rich. The first deal just gives you the knowledge and the experience, and you apply that to all the deals going forward. You take different risks, you take on bigger projects, but if you never get started, you're never going to win. But a lot of us are lacking because we're trying to be GDIs.
That's deep, so, man.
That's my answer.
That's so deep. And would you, because you're married, right?
Yes.
So do you think being married helps you understand that concept more?
Man, I would say being married changed my life because it honed my focus.
Mm.
I always tell people, I put up this quote, this tweet. I was like, if every time you stop to chase a bad bee, you could be setting yourself back like 6 months on your goals.
Facts.
Because you got to relearn her. Yep. You got to court her. You got to deal with her emotions. You got to do all that. Me and my wife, it's on autopilot. I know what she needs. If she has an attitude in the morning, she needs some food. You're gonna get some food. And so, I feel like the most crazy thing about it, and I don't know why it is, and I don't really like to really even go down that path, but I always tell people, like, the first thing they did when they took people off the ship is they broke up the family.
Yep.
And they sent him, her, him there, her there, because there's power in your unity. My favorite scripture, and one of the scriptures I think I'm going to try to incorporate into the business, is where two or more agree, or where two or more are gathered together, there I am. And there's certain power that comes when you connect with somebody. There's certain power that comes when you partner with somebody. It's like when you, 2 + 2 in business isn't, or 1 + 1 in business isn't 2. 1 + 1 in business is like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. And so a lot of people, they're trying to just be one. When you get married, it creates like a lot of benefits. People look at you differently. People give you more respect as a man. More opportunities come to you. You get more focused. You get more driven. You get more determined, because it's kind of like having a child. I don't have any children, but when you have children, you have to become a bigger person. When you're yourself, you get to stay small. Marriage requires you to become a bigger person, because at that point, you're trying to provide for another person. There's this book. I reference a lot of books, but there's this book called The Triple Package. Mm-hmm. And The Triple Package, I was trying to find a quote so I could put it on Instagram, but it talks about how the Mormon community has men who do extremely well in like professional C-suite, high-level careers, because their wives don't work. And so the man has to become a bigger person. And so if you have a wife that doesn't work, right, and another man has a wife that does work, he can make 50, 60. The guy who doesn't have a wife, or the guy who has a wife that doesn't work, has to make 200, which means he's working a lot, which means he's reading more, which means he's doing all these extra things. And so it makes you a better person, but you're competing against people who don't have to be better people. And so marriage, I wish I could like break it down. I think it's definitely a hack, but it's not easy. You have to learn a lot about yourself. You have to give a lot of yourself. But one thing I've even found in doing that is even as you give, you grow. So it's like if you are taking care of somebody else's needs, putting their needs first, it allows you to really reevaluate what you should be doing. Like, we just bought my wife a car, and I'm still driving my car, but it allows you to really reevaluate, like, what's really important. Is a car important? For me, not really, but we do need to make sure that she has a good car.
Right.
And so it's a mindset shift, because a lot of us have parents who, they got separated, and a lot of men grow to be very selfish people, because if you have to pay child support, you're taking care of multiple homes. Like, as soon as you don't have that obligation, you don't want to do anything. So a lot of men, their children turn 18 and they cut it off. Like, that's it. But I find that the men who do provide for their children tend to be more financially successful as well. So it's like running to the obligation instead of running away from the obligation, running to the sacrifice instead of running away from the sacrifice. And we've seen it on my show multiple times. If you see very successful people, they're likely married. And that's another thing that I researched.
Yep, I did too.
It all the time. I was like, right. I was like, huh, there's not a lot of very highly successful single people out here. Like, even Donald Trump, for all his failed marriages, he makes sure he stays married. It's difficult.
Yep.
It's difficult to be successful chasing everything walking. Because you log on Instagram, and it's just like all in your face. And I'm like, it's a lot of power in marriage, because one thing, and this is kind of a weird statement to make, but like when I see something like that, I just unfollow it. Like I don't need to see you naked on my Instagram. Even if I know you personally, I don't need to see you naked on my Instagram. But like single me, we've been double tapped, comments and emojis, sending DMs, but you don't realize how much energy and effort that takes.
A lot.
That is effort that could be applied to your business. That's effort that could be applied to your professional career. But you're over here spending it, chasing down something you're probably not even going to get. And if you do get it, it's probably not even worth it. Her attitude probably sucks. And so that's wasted time and effort. And we need more men to just commit to one, build with one, so they can also focus on building their professional career and their business. And I think that would take us further than determining your worth based on how many women that you can get.
Oh, man, that's super, D. I know you love that. People going to definitely love to hear that, and people need to hear that, because I agree 100%. I feel like, because me and my girl, like I tweeted yesterday, we came into our relationship with nothing. Everything we built together. So it's like, I really understand the value of having someone with you and like working together, having the same goal, the same end goal. So I definitely, I'm with you 100% on that. So that's why I had to ask you. I'm like, it feels like gives me an advantage. I feel, I definitely feel that, but,
it really does.
Yeah. And, but we going to get ready and wrap up. This been a nice, a night, man. This man, like, it's been a lot. I'm gonna have to listen to this one again, like, as soon as we get off, man. I really liked what you was talking about, man. It's very inspiring. Like, you just really inspired me on this morning, man. I definitely appreciate you. But for those who want to get in touch with you, where can they find you, like social medias and all that stuff?
So we have a lot of products, so I gotta think through this. I would say start with the Thai Capital Investment Club.
Okay.
You can find that at www.capitalthai.com. We also, pretty much everything is on the website, and we're going to revamp that website, make it way more dope. It's going to be awesome once we get it to where it needs to go. You can find me on Instagram at Thai Millionaire, on Twitter at Thai Millionaire, on Facebook is Charles L. Oglesby III, JD. Also on LinkedIn, same thing as Facebook. That's pretty much it. On Snapchat, I'm Todd Miller. I don't really use Snapchat that much.
Yeah.
It's strictly like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram stuff.
Yeah.
But check us out. Also, the podcast, Todd Capital Millionaire Podcast. You can find it on Stitcher, iTunes, and SoundCloud. And that's pretty much it.
Yep, man. We definitely appreciate you for coming through. And if it's anything you ever need, like if you want to work on anything, if you need anything, feel free to hit us up anytime, whenever, man. Because I love working with people like you, like minded people. Because like you said, we got to keep working together as opposed to everybody trying to do their own thing. Like even though you got your own platform, it's dope that I got my own platform. I bring you on mine, and I bring other people on mine. Like we don't have to compete. Like we all trying to help and uplift each other together. So it's like, That's the goal to me.
100%.
Yes, sir.
I have a friend named Tamaris Payton. He runs HBCU Wall Street. He put out this post about collaborating and not competing. And I was like, man, you collaborate and the sky's the limit. He said he's starting to believe that when you collaborate, that it's actually the sky is higher than the limit, or the limit is higher than the sky.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we are really doing ourselves a disservice by being individuals. So anything that I can do, I'm always down to promote somebody's product, somebody's business, somebody's anything. That's how I got connected to Andre Hatchett, is just by promoting his book, because his book had a message that I agreed with. I forgot what the book was. It might have been The Owner Beyond.
Okay.
So, I mean, right. So, have you guys had him on your show yet?
Yeah, I've had him, but I haven't released it yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. So, yeah, anything I could do, anything you want to merge with, talk about, I'm definitely here for it.
Yeah, definitely, man. I appreciate that. I'm gonna be keeping in touch with you as well.
All right.
Yeah, all right. Appreciate you, bro.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yes, sir. All right, guys. That was another episode of the Millionaire Mindsets with Charles Oglesby. Like he said, if you guys want to reach out to him, you can hit him up on Thai Millionaire on Twitter, Instagram, or he goes to his website at capitalthai.com. We appreciate you guys for listening. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and rate our podcast. And if you can reach me on Instagram at Xavier C. Miller. For those who don't know, my Twitter is XEM Park Hill. And what else I got? Snapchat at Xavier Miller 312. And you let them know your info.
And you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Deanna Kent. Twitter is Deanna S. Kent. And you can make sure you subscribe to the Millionaire Mindsets daily text subscription by texting at MMindsets to 81010. Again, that's the @ MMindsets to 81010.
And that's all we have for you guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. See you guys next episode. Peace.
On the way to the big check. You ain't know I'm up next, but I'm on the way. You ain't take a risk because you're too afraid. I'ma just eat till I'm overweight. On the way.
A whole lot of shit on the way.
On the way.